many countries, there's two networks. There's the EUNET affiliate, and there's a national R&D-sponsored network, which is typically subsidized, typically aimed at the research and development community. Do you compete with those networks for customers?
Sadly, sometimes we do, but by and large we don't because of two distinctions. The first is that it's simply impossible for us to compete in any long-term fashion with networks that are heavily subsidized. Now, like in the U.S., at least in the past, I'm not sure of the circumstances today, many of the national research networks were founded by their national research boards. Funding was made available by those national research boards to the user organizations for that network, and the funding was earmarked to go directly to that network. Well, then an EUNET representative shows up and says, well, would you like to get a service from us? It costs so much. And it simply doesn't work. When the national networks first started out in some of the countries of Europe, well, let me do a little bit of background because it's quite important. EUNET started around 1982, as I mentioned, and was quite sizable soon thereafter. Most of the national research networks in Europe are phenomena of the mid to late 1980s. So, in fact, EUNET national networks predate the research networks by quite a few years. So typically what we saw was in country X in Western Europe, we had a network up and running. It was providing a variety of connections, sometimes IP, mostly UUCP, and then the National Research Network came. The first few times this happened, and as they started to drain away our subscribers, there was quite a bit of dismay in the networks. But eventually we learned that there was simply no way to retain subscribers under such a base, and we've moved on to a broader subscriber base. Now, we're still primarily in the R&D community, but we are by and large no longer as heavily in the domain of users at major institutes. We still provide connectivity to a lot of major institutes. We've by no means left that area, but it's just no longer our singular thrust.
What types of users do you have, or are you beginning to attract them?
Well, let's draw the big picture across Europe. We have today about 4,500 subscribing networks and sites. Of those 4,500, probably on the order of 4,100 or so are, in fact, UUCP sites. Now, some of those UUCP sites can get fairly big. In some countries, for reasons I'm not entirely clear on, some of our subscribers insist on 24-hour UUCP lines as opposed to IP. Well, they'll learn, and we'll move them over eventually. So we've got on the order of 300 to 400 IP sites. We connect primarily to organizations which started out in the computer science domain and have since starting out there, have moved sort of into the boundaries of that. We connect to institutes, companies involved in research, major multinational corporations, medium-sized companies, and funnily enough, not that many one-man shops or one- or two-man shops. We usually are in the large to medium-sized enterprises. I think in the long run, it's not clear who we will be providing services to, because the market remains highly undifferentiated. There's a lot of market learning to go on. But our goal is to provide services to whomever needs it, with a few exceptions. We are not in the high availability, high reliability networking marketplace. If you want a network that stays up 99.9999% of the time, we don't commit to that level, and you should find someone else to do it. At least that's the next 2 years or so. In the future, we'll see where that evolves. We do not provide real-time networking in the sense of a guaranteed delivery of packets within some narrow time region. And we're not providing services in what we'd call the highly secure marketplace, which to us would include, for instance, financial transactions. That's not our business. Essentially, we're scientific, technical, and then related businesses.
Do you think that EUNET's going to be able to compete in the long run with commercial providers like InfoNet or like SwiftNet in Sweden, or with Sprint, who is rolling out a commercial IP operation?
I'd like not to refer to any specific companies because anyone would take a lengthy discussion.
Okay, well, Fredonia Networking Incorporated.
FNI, right, or FNL for limited. I think we do compete today, and I think we can compete primarily because of three things. Number one, we are long participants in the networking world, and we have exceptional experience in the technology. We understand the technology. Number two, we have a large installed base, and we can use that as a basis for growth. We know how to get to subscribers. And then finally, we have enthusiasts who really know this market, who've been around for a long time, and are good at changing as the environment changes. One of the bases of that is very, very powerful is that we're a lightweight organization in the sense that we do not have massive overhead. We don't have a large unionized staff. Most of our operational centers are 3 to 6 people in a given country. We have a lot of experience in using the appropriately priced, appropriately technical equipment to get our job done. We understand how to march up the smooth price curve and bring in that subscriber base as we go. And I think if we look across the Atlantic River to experience in the United States, some of the networks that have origins similar to ours are quite successful and leading what look like the highly capitalized big telecom-oriented companies. But then again, it is a coin toss, and we'll see what the future gives us.
So you think there's a role for a not-for-profit organization such as yours in a commercial world? You don't think commercial networking is going to take that over?
I think that in the long run, there's probably no such thing as commercial network provision. There's no such thing as a not-for-profit network service provision in terms of lease lines and things like that, because the risks are too great. You move too much capital, you have too many commitments. And you simply need to have the possibility of reward for the risks that come into place. It's not viable to run it by foundations. And EUNET is making that evolution as we speak. Now, I spoke earlier that EUNET is sort of a commercial service provider, and I'd like to actually retreat from that because I'm not sure what commercial is and what commercial isn't in Europe or the United States for that matter. Networking is such a jumbled up domain in terms of what's commercial, what's not. What sort of traffic is allowed, what's not. Are we in a pre-competitive phase? Are we in a post-competitive phase? We seem to be the philosopher's elephant that's described by so many blind philosophers at the same time. What EUNET does is to provide services broadly to people who need those services, and we accept subscription funds for those services. We work in some countries in a not-for-profit fashion. In other countries, notably, let's say, Ireland, we have a for-profit company set up, or Switzerland, simply because, in the case of Switzerland, there's no such thing as a not-for-profit company. What we've said historically is that we are frequently a for-profit structure with not-for-profit goals, but that's evolving. Technical enthusiasm of new technical ideas will wane as the ideas become mature. And things like IP technology are no longer the spanking new, brand new exciting infants that they once were. We're learning more about it. So we will become, in time, more commercial and more for-profit in our structure. Now, in the last 2 years, we've seen an evolution of our core of about 12 networks in Western Europe from mostly being informal associations to primarily being commercial companies in their formal structure. They're still largely working with a not-for-profit structure, but that's changing very, very fast. And I suspect that some of your listeners who'll be listening to this in the middle and later in 1993, may have also heard about more announcements and changes in that direction.
There are many types of network providers in Europe. Many of them come out of the European Commission-sponsored activities, such as the COSINE project, mm-hmm. which has an X25 base. EUNET seems to have been able to avoid the technical religious impulses of using X25 and OSI. Does that cause you problems in Europe?
Well, it has caused more problems in the past than it causes now. EUNET has because of its economic base or lack thereof in terms of subsidies, has had no choice but to do what works and to do what people will pay for. I'll say it again, we've had no choice. So being an engine for European industrial policy or EC industrial policy is simply not available to us. We can't do it. So when it came time to deliver a service, and we tried at some point or another to deliver X25 or OSI or what have you earlier on, it simply didn't have the same kind of popular response as UUCP, RFC 822 email, and so on and so forth. And simply put, in some sense, our users have decided. I like to say that we are the Deng Xiaoping of European networking. We don't care what color the packets are as long as they catch data. It has caused us some conflicts in years past. We, in fact, had a migration plan to go over to OSI circa 1989, but it simply faded. It wasn't the appropriate thing to do. Now, what's been so interesting in the last 2.5 years is that clearly IP has won the day in terms of practical networking. All the major networking in Europe today, and ICSI proponents, independent of what they claim,
ICSI is the X25 infrastructure sponsored by the commission.
Exactly. So the interim X25 infrastructure, I think, is what it was called. ICSI never got, during its projected or its originally planned lifetime, over 64K in terms of its lease line capacity. The performance, I think, was lacking. Its popularity was also lacking. And in the meantime, the IP networks around Europe exploded. Proponents in national networks of X25 and OSI networking have quietly in the last few years become users, the best advocacy of all, of IP networking. Now, in the long run, who knows what we're going to see? If you'd asked me 3 or 4 years ago if OSI, or even 2 years ago, if OSI was going to win the day, I'd say definitely. It was just a matter of time. Now I don't know. I read things by Marshall Rose, and I watch sort of the tone of the networking at large, and it's a coin toss. But I'm very impressed at how the internet standards seem to be winning the day in terms of going towards the future the best and most quickly. But quite honestly, to back up again, we don't view ourselves as network technology bigots. If OSI turns out to be the right implementation, with the right performance, with real products available, and manageable. Notice I made all those qualifications.
You believe in miracles.
Well, I'm willing to accept them, but belief is a little bit of a stretch. If all those things happen and they're not here today, then let's use OSI. I don't care. Why should I? I mean, what do network users want? How do we advance that? That's really the question.
You're listening to Geek of the Week. Support for this program is provided by Sun Microsystems. Sun Microsystems, open systems for open minds. Additional support for Geek of the Week comes from O'Reilly & Associates, publishers of books that help people get more out of computers.